Blog Talk Radio.
Live my life as I see fit. I am not crazy, nor do I live in a world of illusion. I am a man with common sense. I am a human with sensitivities. I will make mistakes, and I will correct them as best I can. I do not need to be badgered, reprimanded, insulted, or shame. I do that to myself, for myself. I am a lover. I'm a love child. The very air I breathe is seductive to the world and pays homage to my ancestors who came before me. They walk with me even now, every day. I appreciate a compliment. I glow with the expectation that there are many who want to share their love. I don't like lies. I don't like deceit. I don't like spreading bad news that can only cripple, not build. I'm always willing to work, willing to sacrifice. But I become bitter when those around me take me for granted and take more than they give. I want to harmonize with myself and every living thing. I want to hear the sweet music and dance its rhythm. I must live my life as I see fit. Anything less is not for me.
We get access to this, Jackson.
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer. And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
WTV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Free to land. Rev Shinaire greetings. Welcome to another edition of Jordan Mr. Radio. I'm your host, Buman Shakir, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal, to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate culture ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transform the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of the new African community. Our fifth goal, to prepare a new African prisoner for release, reduce new African recidivism. And our overall goal is to transform the whole entire pre-industrial slave complex within the prison system so the beginning to learn through educational means, so that brothers and sisters can come to the streets and build respective communities, create institutions and programs, acquire business, land, and nation, and establish their independence. This show tonight, we're paying a special homage and respect to one of our new African freedom fighters, one of our black freedom fighters, like our comrade Joel, believing in self-defense and self-resistance and self-determination. We're paying respect to Baba Masai Ehiosi. You know, so we're going to have different people that are family, friends, associate, and comrade that knew him and worked with him, related to him, to share their thoughts, inspiration, and motivation to people that are listening and those who are going to be listening in the future. And at this time, I'm about to open up the line for Mama Shafi Mbali for her commemoration. Free to land. So your line is open. Go ahead, Mama.
Free to land, brother. Assalamu alaikum.
Vitamin this, sir. Wa alaikum salam.
Brother Masai Ehiosi was a good man. Masai was a believer, a servant, and a soldier. A servant of Allah first and foremost. A servant and soldier of our people. I am grateful to Allah for the triple blessings bestowed on Masai and the honor. His first blessing was that he was called to Allah during Ramadan, the month of fasting and sacrifice. The second, that apparently he transitioned on a Friday. Amongst believers, Friday is a blessed day. And the third, the third. Muslims believe that when a good person dies, one whose good deeds in life far outweigh the bad, the angels gently, very gently, ease their soul from their body. And the fact that he apparently went to sleep and didn't wake up meant that Allah, in his mercy and wisdom, sent the angels, recognizing Masai's spirit and goodness, and gently, smoothly drew out his soul. And lastly, soldier of Black Liberation, former Black Panther, father, grandfather, former Black Liberation Army soldier, worker for independence and self-determination of the Black nation, died on Nation Day of the Republic of New Africa. The honor. Free the land. Free the land. Free the land. Takbir. Allahu Akbar. Free Imam Jamil El-Amin, Mumia Abu Jamal, Afia Siddiqui, Kamal Siddiqui, and all political prisoners. There are three classes of men and women who are cut off from the blessings of paradise. They are oppressors, those who aid and abet oppression, and those who tolerate oppression. From Imam Ali Ibn Abu Talib, may Allah be pleased with him. I turn it back to you, Brother Bomani.
Shanti Shanti, Shukran, Mama, thank you. Okay. Next, we're going to open a line up for Sister Anoa. To get her contribution. Realize that your line is up and go ahead.
Good evening. I share greetings from our family. My name is Anoa Changa, and I'm the eldest daughter of Masai Ahiosi.
Can you speak up a little bit, sister?
Yes, hold on for a second, brother. I'm a little...
Okay. Hello. Is that better?
Okay. Yes.
Good evening, greetings, freedom land. My name is Anoa Changa. I am the eldest daughter of Masai Ahiosi, along with my four brothers and sisters. You know, we are so appreciative. And my mother, we are very appreciative for the outpouring of support from our family and extended family who is from Jersey, Chicago, and folks that we know here in Atlanta. And just for a community who has shown up, and I know people are very, it's tough because this was folks I know had just seen him in different places. I had just seen him. He's always on the go. You would never know what, you know, people go through, and they just push. And that's what I think about his legacy and his life. It was always about service. Even before he converted to Islam, it was always about service to others, right? And making sure family and community were always taken care of no matter what. We were able, with the support of community and family, to be able to bury our father within, you know, the 72-hour period, which is a blessing. But it's been such a challenge the past week and a half, going through his stuff, reading old papers. I was sharing with Bomani earlier that we found like an old book. Like, folks know about his work in Critical Resistance. Folks know about his work with Jericho. But many of you may not know that in the early 90s, one of the earliest things our father did was he was a counselor. He worked with HIV and AIDS patients, HIV positive and AIDS patients in Chicago. Both my parents did when we were growing up for a period of time. And, you know, he has always been about caring for those who needed a voice, but never being the person to take up air and space in the room and making things about him that wasn't about him, about his experience. One thing I have always learned from him, even in my own work and having platforms and access, is that it's not about the platforms and the access. It's about what we're able to do and how we're able to break through the barriers and open the doors for other people to come behind us. And so the tender side of him, and I'm sure people have probably gotten to see and know him in certain ways, but like one of my fondest memories, I have two from childhood. One was I was 11 years old. I had turned 11. I don't know why I was obsessed with Boston cream pies, and this seems frivolous, I'm sure, but this is the type of person he was. I didn't know what we were doing. They let me stay home from school, and we were riding around. My baby sister was in the back seat, and suddenly we're at a bakery, and I had wanted a Boston cream pie apparently for my birthday, and that's what he made sure to get me. And I say that not because it's like, ooh, big deal, your dad bought you a cake, but like that's just who he was, right? Like he tried to make sure that we were able to have good experiences when we were children. Our parents were both very much involved in movement work, very much aligned to principal struggle, but he still tried to make sure that we as kids had what we needed to be whole and be complete. Another experience when I was probably around the same age, sixth grade or so, he took me to the Puerto Rican Culture Center. We were living in Chicago, on the north side of Chicago. I had to do a report on like Pizarro or one of Vasco da Gama, one of those ridiculous settlers, explorers, whatever, right? Colonizers, pillagers, and that process, he made sure that I had the materials, the resources, and gave me access to the expertise of folks at the Puerto Rican Culture Center to be able to turn in a paper that was well-documented, well-sourced, and able to provide a people's history, a people's truth. And that was something that was instilled in us from a very young age. It's something that carried through our conversations, and even as I stepped into adulthood and transitioned from legal practice into organizing and engaging in progressive politics and as journalism and other things. And the conversations that we began to have matured. But always at his core was this mutual respect and understanding for making sure that our value alignment was always at the center of everything that we did. And when I think about, you know, everyone's reflections, and we've heard so many stories, and we've seen so many pictures already in the past week, and I stumble upon letters from different notable people or pictures with folks, and it's like, oh, my God. But he was so humble. He was so humble, and it was never about him. And I think about conversations we've had, and I've asked him now in my 40s, now having been a reporter covering certain, you know, struggles and work and doing particular interviews, like I'll go to him and ask him for advice to make sure not that he's a gatekeeper, but he's knowledgeable, right? He understood the interconnections between different movements, how we're talking about things. Is this the right way to even capture the work and life of someone that, you know, we're prioritizing in this way? I reflect on a conversation he and I had in 2018 on the anniversary of the murder of Fred Hampton. And one of the things that we were talking about was about the way in which we kind of take some of the wrong lessons away from people's lives. There's a lot of brilliant, brilliant work, right, that I think people have been able to develop and been influenced by, you know, from the unfortunately short life of Fred Hampton. But there's a lot of the wrong lessons people take away from the little that they're allowed to know, right? And, you know, even reading with the movie and clips from, you know, Fred Hampton, you know, Chairman Fred Jr. talking about just what, how much of what we know about his father, how much of what we know about the Panthers has been told to us through, you know, a white supremacist media system, right? Told to us through like FBI and COINTELPRO. And so to be able to sit at the feet of someone who has not placing him in certain places unnecessarily, but like who has had certain shared experiences in a similar time period and an arc of several decades of struggle to really get better context of how do we tell the stories about our work, right? Like one of the things, you know, that he shared was more about like, you know, those lessons and what we can just glean from people and how they move and live their own lives and how we in right relationship and principled struggle can also move, but not just moving for the sake of saying we're moving, because a lot of times, unfortunately, folks get caught up in the feeling of rhetoric, right, and recreating our connection to a time that we've only seen glamorized in movies or social media posts or whatever the case may be. But like really understanding what does it mean to have a practical application of that analysis, right? That we're not just all hard up on rhetoric, that we actually have a practical, we can have practice to go along with the praxis. And that's what I really appreciated about my father. He wasn't just preaching to be preaching. He was actually like walking a specific path. I was reading the reflection from Critical Resistance. He is a founding member. He is also, I did not realize this, he is the longest continuously involved member of Critical Resistance from what they shared in the email tribute. And, you know, I've seen him in organizing spaces with people I also know as peers, right, not knowing that we had the same colleagues in common, and seeing him in conversation, and not because I'm older and I've been this or I've been incarcerated so I know more than you. Like, that's never how he approached things, right? He has such a humble spirit, and he loved to find kindred souls to be able to be in conversation with. Because if you get the good brother talking, if you could get him to, because sometimes he's humble, he's just real, like, low-key, but if you got him talking on a real good day, it wasn't no stopping him. And the jewels and the gems, and I'm so honored that there are so many people who have clips and streams and audio and all types of stuff that my niece, who is 4 and a half, will get to still see the legacy of her grandpa, right? My children, who are in their early 20s, who got to hear some of that, will get to hear even more. And so there's so much beauty that has been created in the life of someone that struggled and fought so hard. But I want to share with everyone that there was so much joy that he had in his family and in his children and grandchildren, but also in the work and in the people that he built community and family with outside of us. You know, he was always telling me, like, oh, I got to get you to go talk to the good brothers in Chicago about this. Or, oh, I need to connect you with the people in Critical Resistance about this. Or, oh, we need to go to Jackson and do this. Like, he just always was thinking about others. And we often had to remind him that it's okay to let us think about you and to help you as well. When he first converted to Islam, when I was, I was like a sophomore in high school, maybe, he was always like a committed person, like I said, but like there was a very real change in terms of his discipline and commitment and his real firm, like it just reaffirmed what was already in him, right? And I would say to him often, like as I got older and we would offer to take him, you know, to the grocery store and things of that nature when he needed to go to doctor's appointments, and he'd be like, no, I could do this, or I could figure it out. Very selfish, you know what I'm saying? I know y'all probably got folks like that in your lives too. But I remember telling them on more than one occasion, I'm sure my sisters have said the same, you know, Allah bless you with five children for a reason. And he would look at me, he would smile and laugh. He'd be like, true. But I would remind him, not because I'm trying to like evoke something that I know meant something to him, because it's a truth, right? That the genuine love, Masai not being my birth father, has not negated the genuine love that we had for him. You know, he married my mother when my brothers and I were little, and he never differentiated between us and my two sisters. We were all his children, right? He would tell people I was his oldest. Like, it never mattered. And even he and my birth father had a mutual, more than just a mutual, like, you know, hey, like there was a real respect and camaraderie because they both had that same ethos and understanding about children, family, and community. And that's something that we all carry in our own lives and our own work and how we continue to build. So as we continue to, you know, grief is a very long process, right? When people leave us, they leave an imprint on us, but it's still that wondering about, wait a minute, I have this other question. I need to ask them, or, you know, you still have those, and they talk about, you know, time heals all wounds and all that other stuff, but I'm so thankful that we have this amazing and beautiful legacy that he's left behind. It is not the same as literally being able to call him to ask for clarification, but it is a beautiful thing to be able to hear and read and see his old letters, his writings, his voice, living on, informing and engaging and getting to know people who have learned from him and who I know for a fact he has learned from. So if folks are listening and they ever felt like they received something from my dad, please understand and believe he probably also received and learned something from his conversations with you too. Because like he was always striving, he was always learning, he was always just working to be the best he could be in the service of you know, his faith and the movements and people and struggles that he was committed to, and then his family. I'm definitely faith first, family movement probably, you know, tied for a second. But, you know, it's just beautiful seeing him, the way in which he was able to, like, merge across conversations and movements, and he transcended even generationally what people might think is, oh, someone of that age or that faith wouldn't be acceptable to these conversations with these types of people. But, like, he just saw commonality in humanity. And I'm not saying that in the way people try to, like, run behind folks who are trying to undermine and destroy us, but, like, he saw the commonality amongst Black people. We think about, like, Latino people and, like, you know, he just was recently in Puerto Rico for a convening. Like, he was always showing up. He was always there. He was always giving and never really needing or asking for much from anyone. And I think that's an honorable thing, but I also think that there is a generational curse that we have been taught to be a certain way, that we can't ask for what we need and deserve. And the one thing I wish we were able to do more of while he was here was, you know, as the young folks say, give him his flowers, right? But I know he knew he was appreciated. But I think that we tend to wait until we have lost to really do the appreciation. So I'm wrapping up. I appreciate you, Bomani, for opening up the space. I don't know that I think it's still too soon for most of the family to call in. I do hope other folks are able to join in, though. But I just ask all of us to really, like, he's not on a pedestal. He was a person like the rest of us, but he definitely was a good example of how we, you know, love and treat each other, how we move in righteous purpose in our work and in our own self-worth, and how we can thrive in spite of all the adversities. I don't know if, you know, 17-year-old him who was heading to the Marines to Vietnam in the late 60s, mid-late 60s, knew what was coming ahead for him. You know, losing my uncle, his comrade, Kambozi, alongside when him and Safia Bukhari were snatched in Virginia, I don't know at that point in his mid-20s, he knew what was ordained and headed for him, what was coming for him in the future. And so he has definitely probably surpassed even his wildest dreams, I'm sure. And the five of us, along with the grandkids, we're going to do our best to make sure that he lives on. And I know all of you will join us in the same last thing, and I'm sure Bomani will help us with sharing information. We are still, like I said, very much in the beginning stages of just dealing with all the matters that you deal with when someone passes. But we will be planning in coordination with, you know, his close friends, comrades, and colleagues in our family. We'll be planning a memorial, so there will be more information to come for folks who are interested. And so I thank you, brother, for making a space, and I'm going to turn it back to you now.
Appreciate it, sister. I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm going to open up to the next person. Make their contribution. Okay, free to land. Baba Jahay, your line is open. Go ahead, bro.
Thank you, my dear brother Bomani. Assalamu alaikum. Alhamdulillah. Alhamdulillah. Wa salatu wa salamu ala Muhammadin, Nabiya wa ala alihi wa sabi ashmeen. All praise be to Allah, the Lord of the world. Peace and blessings be upon Prophet Muhammad, his family, his companions, all of them together. Ameen. Again, my name is Jihad Abdulmameet, and I appreciate you, my dear brother Bomani, for making space for all of us to speak. I'm just intrigued by all of the speakers before me and the sister, Baba Masai's daughter, they're speaking. It's so much information. just so a couple of words. I am a comrade of Masai's. Both of us were in the Black Panther Party. Both of us were in the Black Liberation Army. Both of us are armed combatants. Both of us are up in age. So I just, there's certain things that I just wanted to share that I'm sure is going to be reiterated in many different ways in the passing of our dear beloved comrade and the history, the rich history that he was able to live all of his life. I didn't know about his involvement with HIV and helping people in that regard. There's so much history there that we're constantly pulling the layers off of our dear beloved comrade. But what is it, though, actually? What does it mean? What does it mean when a warrior in our struggle for true liberation and freedom from historic and systemic racist oppression and exploitation and social degradation transitions? What does it mean? What does it mean when that warrior is no longer amongst us and we are still in 2024 disorganized, relatively unproductive, and being paralyzed by our own ranting analysis of our plight here in Babylon? What does it mean? What does it mean when our comrade who waged armed struggle against our armed attackers returns to Allah? Have we drawn from his courage? Have we taught ourselves and our families and our children to defend themselves and fight when necessary? Have we taken notice of the spiritual path and connection that Masai had with his creator Allah in becoming a Muslim? Have we recognized the connection that he did in following Al-Hajj Malik al-Shabazz and being Muslim? Do we see the connection with Comrade General Sekou Dingo? With all of us that have taken our shahada and become Muslim, do we see, sisters and brothers, the value of this spiritual connection? Are we overlooking this black, strong elephant in the room? Are we overlooking their beliefs? So I say, if we must die, and surely we must die, then let it be something like the father, the warrior, the comrade, the soldier, the panther, the Black Liberation Army member, who fought courageously, who loved his people, who believed in Allah with all his heart and soul. Let us show ourselves complete spiritual, mental, and physical fighters like Basai Ehohosi. Let us carry on this legacy of this comrade brother. You know, I had the very distinguished honor with a couple other dear beloved brothers of mine, a brother by the name of Waziri Mustafa Waliuddin, who's the chairperson of Jericho in Atlanta, Georgia, and a part of the Jamaat, the Sheikh Mandel Folio, which we are both members of, and a brother by the name of Bilal Stroud and myself. We washed the body of Masai. We washed his body. So I'm looking at my comrade on this steel table as we perform the ritual wudu and then the ghusl, as we cleaned his body, as we shrouded him in three sheets, as we prepared him for his beloved family to view his body. And I'm looking at the passing of a legacy. And so the last thing I want to leave with you, my dear listeners, is that I recognize the fact that that era, those soldiers that were involved in that era, we are definitely transitioning away from you. We are transitioning away from you. Your next thing, you have to get those lessons from a book or from something that's written, or from an old video or webinar, but we and the living soldiers, as part of those struggles, that rich struggle that's not mentioned in Black History Month in February, that's not mentioned in your schools, that's not mentioned in colleges and universities, that rich history that Masai Ehohosi represented fully, is the passing of that. And I'm pleading with you to whatever capacity that you can, based upon your life experiences and everything new that you learn from day to day, that you make sure you make those commitments within yourself and renew those commitments also, so that to be involved in these struggles to whatever capacity that you can. We just can't be rhetoric. We have to build that infrastructure. You know, he was unapologetically a member of the Republic of New Africa. He did not want to have anything to do with a colonizer state at all. He had separated himself physically, mentally, and spiritually, and he embedded himself in the true movement for liberation. So I hope that we can learn from the legacy before we all pass on and transition, and be none of us left. It'll be up to those in the living and our children and our children's children to be able to address the woeful state that we're in. The state that can watch on TV, YouTube, cell phone connections, the massive genocide that's going on, and be absolutely powerless to do anything about it. To look at the genocide in the continent of Africa, from the Congo to the Sudan and everywhere else, that the United States has gutted our homeland, have gutted it, and have us fighting amongst ourselves like brothers on the street corner, if you will, fighting each other in absolute unadulterated ignorance. You know, how are we going to master it? How are we going to change this around? So Masai, the comrade, Baba Masai, left us with some tremendous examples. I hope we can draw from them. I pray Allah causes his grave to be spacious and wide, which is a prayer that we always make for each other. And we will be in that grave, each and every one of us. And we pray that Allah reward him for the best of his deeds and enter him into paradise. And I make that prayer for each and every one of us when we transition also. So with that, brother comrade Bomani, I leave with the prayer of Subhanaka Allahumma wa bihamdika ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Glory be to thee, O Allah, and praise be to you. We turn to you in repentance and forgiveness, and we bear witness that there is none besides you. Amen. Assalamu alaikum, and thank you very much.
Alex Salam, I appreciate that, good brother. At this time, I'm going to open up Bobby Ashanti line. Three line.
Free land, Baba. Go ahead.
Oh, right on. All power to the people. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you, brother. Go ahead.
Then I got to tell you, hearing a Noah's voice, and then hearing my comrade Jihad, oh, boy. I'm going to do the best that I can. And
okay.
I just do the best that I can. Noah, I love you. And you tell your siblings, I love them. You tell Wakirisana, I love her. Masai was not just my comrade. That was my buddy. You know, I often say, you know, like we from Jersey. We from Jersey. Jihad is from Jersey. The land of Parliament Funkadelic and advanced revolutionaries. I'm going to get in that thing. I'm going to get in that. You know, Masai. It said that the BLA was never infiltrated by the BLA or the FBI. And I believe it's true. And maybe because recruitment was based off of you being friends and relatives and neighbors and cellies and of the same or outlaw circles that knew about each other. Maybe that helped. But how me and Masai never met formally till after his relief was still something that baffled both of us when we would have these conversations. You know, his co-defendant, Safia Bukhari, was also the Panther woman who recruited me into the Black Liberation Army to unsuccessfully liberate some prisoners of war from the Manhattan House of Detention. And we moved on, and during the course of a bank expropriation in New Haven in 1974, several of us was captured, and then we found out later that Safia Masai Kombozi were confronted with some real racist armed folks in Virginia, and Kombozi was killed. Masai was shot in the face, and then him and Safi were captured. It wasn't until like after Masai did all that time, like 14 years, that he's back in Jersey, that me and him actually really formally met. But then we'd be having these conversations and realize how all these people who we knew in common in different circles, and we had to have crossed each other so many times. You know, me and living in New York, working out of the Liberation Bookstore, you know, and meeting Wakirisana, you know. So, Noah, I love you. And then later, you know, Wakirisana and Masai hook up. Like, whoa, this is so nice. Masai was always that person, like Noah has said, that he's just a really good person. This brother is just a really good person, you know. And he's the kind of people that was coming into the ranks of the Panther Party, the Republic of New Africa, the ranks of the Black Liberation Army. You're talking about the Matulus and all of them. We just really some good people. Deep down, we just some good people. And that's why we're here, because good people come to the conclusion that they got to sometimes, somehow fight for their people by any means necessary. You know. So here we go. What moved me about Masai was that any time me and him was in the same space, whether we was on the phone or we was at some kind of meeting together, some kind of conference, It's like when any of us comrades, when we're together, we get to talk amongst each other in ways that a lot of other people won't understand because of what we've been through. We can actually kind of let our guard down and share, you know. And it's important that we do that, you know, because it's like, yo, it's not always about being the tough and the rough and doing what's necessary as a freedom fighter to struggle. You know, sometimes we got to say, yo, man, that prison was hell. I don't care whether it was Lewisburg, whether it was that prison in Virginia the Maasai was at, all the different ones that Jihad was in, Daruba, Jaleel, whatever. Sometimes when we're together, we share in ways that we know other people may not understand, but we need to do it because it reminds us of why we joined this struggle, what we knew we were getting into, and we took, you know, those of us who were able to survive, we took the prison, we took the batterings, we took all that stuff, and somehow we got out, and we're able to see each other a lot of times for the first time and, like, say, hey, right on, we did it, but we're still here, and we want to give to those who still want to carry this struggle on. I'm not going to be long, but I think that such a big part of this that I want to get out is what it meant for Maasai to have vision. I'm out of the Panther Party. I have not identified as New African. I have not. That's not my program. But he always knew that I got your back. Y'all can do it. I got your back, you know. And that's the way that me and his relationship worked. So when we was together and we could have them conversations, he could bring me up to date on what's happening with the Republic of New Africa. He could bring me up to date on his actions in the same time we were both members of Critical Resistance. And I would share with him as the anarchist, you know, like Kwesi Balogun and others, you know, like what I was doing. Always involved with the struggle for our liberation as a people, coming at it from maybe different perspectives and different formations, but not for a minute was there any disagreement about what the ultimate goal was. So him being involved and me being involved with Critical Resistance, we know that we want any work that could be done to disrupting that arm of this empire that confines us, that captures us, that controls us and cages us. Anything we can do to break that is always in the interest of our liberation. How that manifests in different territories, whether it was that five-state thing down south or whether we still in the Harlems of this empire in different places, we still got to figure out how to get our self-determination. What it's going to look like, we can figure it. He was always envisioning a Republic of New Africa free. And I just admired that commitment that he had to that, you know. And it's like, wow, I hear Anoa speak, and I'm like, oh, my God, he's got to be listening to her. He's got to be, like, so proud of this child. I can't even believe that she's in her 40s. I still have a hard time with that. But to hear your child and knowing that your children and those whose lives you touch are here for you, oh, my God. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. You just got to see it. You got to feel it. So I'm going to say that, and there was this poem I wanted to read, and I'm going to end with it. One of these times I was doing a zine, I was going to be doing these zines and stuff, but there was this poem I came across from this sister named Crystal Y. Sadler. It was written in 1991, and it's titled, I Dream of Revolution. And here it goes. To dream that we would take over the South in armed revolution, rename it New Africa, elect the prayers practiced in Nguzu Saba, teach ourselves our history, not his story, and learn to love being black. That's the simplicity of a Maasai Ehehozu. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. Touch people in their hearts. Touch people in their living realities so that they can dream of a free life, a free society, and even in the belly, or I say in the brain of this empire. He lived that to the end, I'm sure. And I want to say that in Bomani, as others have said, to really appreciate that you have pulled this together to allow those of us who are his comrades, fellow soldiers, to be able to honor him. This struggle goes on until we're going to win. I love y'all. All power to the people.
Love you too, Bob. Yes, sir. Okay. About to pull up our next person. We'll bring Sister Paulette on. Okay, free the line. Get the lines up and go ahead, Paulette.
Thank you very much, Bumani, and thank you for this time and to hear everybody talk about my dearest comrade. I met Maasai Ehehozu through Safia Bukhari, and she was in the hospital, and she said, I want to give you some people that will be trustworthy. And if you ever have any questions about a political prisoner, all you have to do is talk to Maasai Ehehozu. He will be able to give you any information, and you will know that it is honest, and that is what should be happening. Safia, of course, herself was a member of the Republic, and for her to talk about Maasai like that was something that was very moving, because that was on the last couple of days of her life when we sat and talked about how she saw Jericho moving forward and the truth that needed to be told about the political prisoner. And so when I met him and told him that, he said that he found that to be very interesting. He said, because, you know, the sister and I have some contradictions, but he said, I'm thankful that she thought of me in that way. And from that time on, Maasai was like this amazing historian, not just of the Republic, but of the struggles that Ashanti and Jihad have brought mention to. And so when Jihad called me and told me Maasai had made his transition, I could not believe him. So I immediately called Maasai's number, and his daughter answered. And I've gotten to know them through knowing Maasai. And she said, yes, Dad has passed on. And it was like we lost a person who could explain why we need to abolish prisons and how that could happen through critical resistance and people organizing, and at the same time talk about the reality of the political prisoner movement and the prisoners who we did not know who are behind these pages, but were members of other organizations. And Masai and I were working together, and he introduced me to Bomani to talk about political prisoners from other organizations, from the Republic, and how to include them and the importance of the role that the Republic had made in the building of Jericho. Ashanti and I, neither one of us could go to Atlanta for the janazah. But at 10 o'clock that morning, Ashanti and I put up smoke. We burned some sage, and we talked about our wonderful relationships with Masai and what we had learned and how we wanted to make sure that his teachings and whatever he had written gets passed on, because as young people come into these movements, they are not learning the history of the struggle. They are not learning the role of the Black Liberation Army. And so it's our responsibility to put that out to them. But as our elders pass, Sekou, Masai, Safia, and others, it behooves us to be honest with the young people, to make sure, like Masai said, that they know that there's consequences to their action and what that means, so that people don't just jump into things, but through study, they learn the way to be a revolutionary. And to me, Masai was a wonderful example of what a revolutionary should be. And it will always be for me to thank him and to talk with him when I have a question and say, am I right about this? Isn't that what you said? Because I learned so much from him about the Republic, about the struggles, about how a non-Muslim should carry themselves around a Muslim society. And for that, I will be eternally grateful. And thank you, Bomani. I should say that I spoke to Mao Min right after I heard, and Mao Min said, oh, Paulette, he said, I thought I would be gone before Masai. I don't know what I'm going to do now. So those of you out there that know Mao Min Kabar, please keep in touch with him. We can't leave him without his friend, his buddy, his comrade. And I know Masai would expect nothing less of us than to do that. So thank you, Bomani, for allowing us and allowing me this little bit of time to talk about my wonderful comrade. Free the land by any means necessary.
Appreciate it, Father. Appreciate it. Okay. At this time, I'm going to go to our next person. Okay. Yep. Free land, Brother Darryl. Robert Darryl, your line is open. Go ahead, Bob.
All right. Thank you, Baba Bomani. Let me tell you, I am so glad to be here to be able to talk about
Speak, speak up a little louder, Bob. Speak up a little louder, Bob. Speak up a little bit.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
A little bit. Yes, go ahead.
All right. Big love to Anoa, your sisters and brothers, your mom, to Shafia, to all of you, everybody. I'm missing Masai so much. You know, a lot of us are organizers, and we think that we are doing some work or whatever. But, you know, it's good to have somebody like Masai in your life who will call you up and give you some extra work if he thinks you ain't doing enough and straighten you out. Or sometimes I used to like to talk about issues with Masai because it could get deep, you know. And I learned so much, and I liked when we would be challenging each other and stuff. And then we would always run into each other so many different places. And then when I moved to Atlanta, I got to hang out with him and stuff. And so I learned so much. And he loved his family so much, his girls especially. I mean, you know, I used to always, when I talked to him, I used to always say, "Hey, Masai, how's baby girl doing?" He say, "All right, don't be trying to addict her on them darn Krispy Kreme donuts." But I know it sounds really crazy, but sometimes we learn from people who will spend the time to help us learn what we need to be doing and tell us how we need to do it and give us information that we don't always know. And so he was so cool. You know, he came to Detroit for the 50th anniversary of the Republic of New Africa. We were at the Community Movement Builders conference just a few months ago, and we would always be talking on the phone maybe every couple of weeks or so. And so it was really a shock when he left us. But I just wanted to tell everybody that we have to try to be like Masai. I mean, you know, he could talk to almost anybody, you know, and he'd take his time. And it wasn't like we always thought that he'd talk a whole lot, because, you know, sometimes he'd be so quiet and he'd be so busy and stuff. But he'd call you up, and he'd call me up, and he'd say, "Look, I heard you was talking about such and such." He'd say, "What do you know?" And I say, "I don't know. What do you know?" And then we'd have a long discussion. And I'm going to miss him so much. I wish I could say as much as the rest of you have said. But all I can say is that for the rest of my life, I'm going to try to be a little like Masai. I'm going to try to be busy, 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 working and organizing for the freedom that we want to see. But at the same time, I got to figure out how to love all of our people like him, even if he had some short criticisms or some thoughts that we need to think about how people move or what they was doing. He still showed big love for folks who were active about trying to do the organizing to help our communities and to help our people. I don't know if what I've said so far made any sense, but for those who know Masai, you know that he was a person who had big love in his heart, and he'd show it, and he'd tell you, but he wasn't like just showing off. It was him. He would talk to me about so much stuff. Our last conversation, I stopped eating meat in November. And so he was telling me where to go and buy tofu and how to cook it and all that other kind of stuff. And I was saying, "Masai, are you kidding?" He said, "No, I'm trying to tell you, if you're going to be doing this, you got to do it right." And so I know I'm not sounding all that serious to people, but I loved Masai. It was the kind of person that he was, that he helped me so much and made me think about stuff that I wasn't really thinking enough about. Linda Thurston had put me in critical resistance. Masai would call me up and say, "Look, you're not paying enough attention to stuff." And I say, "All right, Masai, tell me what to do." And he'd tell me what to do. I know this sounds really crazy as hell, but I'm going to miss him. And so if any of you are listening and are on the phone and y'all want to step up and step in Masai's footsteps, don't be shy. Give me a call and tell me what I should be paying attention to or what I need to be doing. And for love for everybody on the phone, especially his family, sending big love to you. And Shafia, everybody, free to land. I used to tell Masai, I said, "Yes, I'm a citizen of the Republic of New Africa." He say, "All right." He say, "Free to land ain't enough for you. You better be doing some more work." And so I know I sound really crazy on this phone tonight, but I just wanted to let folks know that we should show our love to Masai by trying to be like he was and try to do the work and be the revolutionary that he was. All right, free the land. Thank you, Brother Bomani.
Pardon me, necessary. I appreciate it, Baba Darrell. I appreciate it. Over the next line.
Pretty line, brother, man. Let's go ahead. Your line's open.
Free the land. Greetings to everyone. My name is Akin Bekele. I am the Minister of Interior for the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa. And I just want to give my condolences to Baba Masai's family and to all those loved ones that that knew him. I myself did not get a chance to really meet him until I started working with the Republic, and it was a few years after that before I actually got a chance to meet and talk with him. But ever since the first day that I met Baba Masai, he always embraced me, and he always was like everyone else. It says he was just a good person, and I really appreciate that because I had not been in the art of becoming a revolutionary for long, so it was a lot of things that I didn't know.
Brother Lyon, drop hold up. And the brother Lyon. We're going to go to the next person until you come back on because the brother line dropped. Okay. Free line, sister. You got anything you want to say? The line is on the free line, sister.
Free the land.
This is Coco.
Hi, Annie.
Okay, go ahead.
Free the land. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. All right. Yes. So I appreciate you putting this together and giving everyone an opportunity to share their experience with Baba Masai. It's been really nice to hear everyone so far. For those who don't know, my name is Sister Coco. I am a conscious New African citizen. And also engaged in different areas of organizing work within the broader Black liberation struggle. And so for me, I too also met Baba Masai through our good comrade, Bumani, who's here today. Back a few years ago, I was organizing a demonstration in support of New African prisoners during Black August solidarity. And Baba Masai was asked to, he was put in contact with me, and I had asked him to speak on this broadcast, and he still to this right not too long ago was still reminding me of how he feels like I tricked him into that, because he felt that there has to be some clarity around. Hold on one second, please. Hold on. Okay, say please. And so, he always wants to, us to make sure that we understand the distinction between dismantling the prison industrial complex and, prison abolition. And what are those differences? And so after meeting Baba Masai through that, I also met him at Nathan Day, and he still was hesitant about me, but over the past few years, we've had, several times where, we've several conversations, and we studied together, we took trips together. There were so many times where, and so many lessons that I was able to learn from Baba Maasai and his history and the work, the struggle, his lifelong struggle to, you know, free new Africans for land independence. As a conscious new African himself, active within the provisional government, you know, he taught me a lot, and always spoke about, you know, us going back to the land and being on the land and a lot of the contradictions with folks who do, you know, say free the land but have no intentions about, you know, and thinking about what it means to be connected to the land in that struggle. You know, Baba Maasai, I could think about so many things, even if it's like, so, you know, just having coffee with him, like, you know, we would have, you know, conversations over coffee, and even, you know, before he passed, like, I can't even have a cup of coffee without thinking about some of those conversations that we've had. And so, although this has been a tremendous loss, you know, I'm so thankful to have these moments, to be able to meet and speak with Baba Maasai's comrades and really feel like he was family to me. So it's been very difficult, you know, finding out I had just spoke to him and was supposed to actually see him the weekend before his passing. And so these are things that I know that, you know, he left a lot of good work that he instilled in many of us behind. And I know that I know that I will push forward and continue to struggle in understanding and the clarity that he brought to understanding what this struggle is about. And again, I'm going to stress the land and independence part because that was very important. And regardless of the fact that he was Muslim, he associated that struggle to our struggle as New Africans, and that he helped me also, you know, recognize how much our struggles are interconnected. And I will forever be thankful and love and respect his legacy. So, Santi Sana for those who are here today and who will continue to honor our ancestor. I yield to the Lamb.
Battering that there, I appreciate that. Okay, at this time with the next person, I'm about to open up a live Baba Honda. Go ahead, Baba Honda, see the Lamb, Baba.
Hey, Amy's Nestor, if you land. You know, it really hit me like a ton of bricks when I heard that Maasai had passed. I wrote down a couple of thoughts I wanted to say about him. I first met Maasai back in the early 90s as I was working at the Spirit Shield Collective, and he was working with us, and he was glad to meet another New African on the streets. I want to say that Maasai was a master organizer. Through Maasai, but I met most of the people on the land, they, or at least my relationship with the independence movement was facilitated and expanded by knowing Maasai. He went into prison as a revolutionary, and he came out as a revolutionary. I say that Maasai embodied the New African Creed. I think that when I think about the Creed, and I think about Maasai, and I think about my interactions with him and watching him work with other people, it was always kind of fascinating to hear him in conversation, because you could always hear a smile in his voice, but he was always being very thoughtful. He would offer honest commentary and critique, you know. When you watched him, you could just tell that even when he was listening, which is a good thing, because he knew he had two ears, he didn't always try to out-talk nobody. But his mind would be working, and he would be considering different aspects of the conversation, of the problem, of the thing that we were discussing. And I would say that in the Rebuild Collective, Maasai If it wasn't for Masai, we probably wouldn't have started it. I mean, because he helped us pull it together and get the paper off the ground. And he was an inspiration. And like I said, he was a master organizer. So he might have, he agreed with us in principle. He united with us in principle, and he did work with us as far as getting the paper out. But, you know, like anything, Masai was a complicated brother, and he would have some reservations, but that's just his way, you know. But that's mostly what I wanted to say. I didn't want to take up a lot of time. I do want to say that I appreciate everybody that came on the line before me. I know most of the people except Oscar. I've formerly met Jahad, and I met Shafia just briefly. But I know Paulette because of Masai, you know. And Coco, we met working in the independence movement, and I know you, Bomani, because of Masai. So I think that this is a great struggle we've taken up, but it's people like Masai that give me hope. You know, like I said, he never, to me, deviated from his revolutionary principles. You know, and as far as like, when people talk about the army, the way he behaved and the way he believed, you could tell that, you know, he was still a soldier. So I had nothing but man love and respect for Masai. And I'm going to miss him terribly. We're going to miss him terribly. And, yeah, so, yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Okay, I appreciate that, Bob. I think it goes in there. I appreciate that. Free line, Bob Cleve, your line is open. Go ahead, bro.
Is that Khalid?
Yes.
Revolutionary greetings to all the people of the African independence movement and those who struggle against oppression. You know, first of all, I want to just say to the family, you know, Masai was more, I'm a member of this family, and that's how close that brother, I considered him. Again, I say, As-salamu alaykum to my Muslim brothers and sisters, the Hebrew brothers and sisters, salam, salam. And to my new African Christian brothers and sisters, I say, praise the Lord. We salute the memory of our brother Masai. You know, separation is painful. To me, he was a living legend who would be greatly missed. You know, he was like a blast from the past. But he was an ever-present soldier with me. You know, years ago, when I first got out of prison in 1978, I met Shafia, and she was telling me about her rappy. I hadn't met him then, and we were struggling against the grand jury, say no to the grand jury. And at that time in 1979, we had a group of our students from Chicago come to march on the United Nations when Sada had got there. We were charging the United Nations with genocide. We were struggling to free political prisoners. You know, what is a political prisoner? What is a political prisoner of war? We were doing those things. And Safia was telling me at that time, she was very ardent and you know, very aggressively against the government's attack on the people at that time when Sada had got liberated. And you know, she was telling me about Masai, her rapi. And, you know, I'm going to cut it short because a lot of people have talked and said everything. I give the greetings to the brother Jahad and brother Jabil and Sunday Allah and Sekou and all the brothers that got out and continued to struggle. Masai was of that type of caliber. He got out, he continued to struggle. So when he wound up in Chicago, but before that, he was with a group with the American Friends. He sent me to some meeting with them, and that's when I met Brother Ferguson and his wife. And also then I met Safia's daughter. And the children are revolutionaries because she started struggling. I remember at one point when Safia was having trouble with her daughter, but when her daughter, after Safia continued to work with her, she transformed it and began to take her mother's place. That was a blessing. So, you know, when I hear Unua, it brings tears to my eyes because I knew these young people when they was growing up. Because Masai was always there with Kurt Sama. You know, and the old thing. So I always told Masai, I said, man, that I'm a Marxist Lenin, I'm a Christian, I'm a Black Panther, I'm everything. Because the New African Nation gonna be made of all kinds of people, and what we got to do is rebuild that New African Nation, and then begin to rebuild on the foundation that was laid by Brother Imari, by Brother Chokwe, and by all the other revolutionary brothers in our struggle. You know, with Masai, we constantly went back and forth about our nationality, that we were New Africans and our ethnicity, that we were descended of enslaved Africans up under colonial domination. And that most of all, that we are at war against an invisible enemy, but a very much present enemy. And, you know, and racism on the top of that. And so Masai and I, we talked about these things, about the how people were being traumatized, and we kept on having discussion. But I wanted to share with you that when Masai came to Chicago, we constantly, every day, the brother, we would be talking about the struggle for independence and talking about our people. And Masai wasn't scared. He wasn't scared to struggle. And when the enemy was looking for a brother by the name of Mamiya, which is my brother-in-law, you know, so I told Masai, I said, man, can you hold this brother? He said, yeah. So then, next thing I know, you got helicopters flying over Masai's house. They like the Masai and Mamiya. So then we wind up, after 27 years, after they let Masai go, but then when they Miles got locked up for 27 years after that, and then when he got out, we finally got him out on capacity release. And once we got your brother out, him and Masai had grown so tight, you know, they were Muslim brothers, and you know, they were my brothers, and I just want to share that this brother continued the struggle against oppression, and again, I say that it hurt me to hear about his transition, you know, to the ancestors. And so, you know, I say a salute to continue to those that are still in the struggle, stay in the struggle, and continue the battle for liberation. And I say free the land. Free the land by any means necessary.
Free the land. I appreciate that, Baba. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate that, Baba.
Thank you.
Free the land. So your line is open. Go ahead.
Free the land, everyone. First and foremost, I would like to say thank you. Just as others have, thank you as well, Brother Bumani, for opening up this space to honor and speak on the life of a great brother, Baba Masai. I haven't known him for very long, just a little over 3 years, I would say. But in that time, I have had the opportunity to learn so much from such a great person, yet so humble in spirit, and I can say at the least just amazing to have that opportunity to learn so much from him about the New African Independence Movement, his connections to people, and all of the knowledge and wisdom that he bestowed upon me, and me listening to him give and pour into others as well, so that we can have the opportunity as well to gain a proper understanding of what it is that we're fighting for as a people. And I just appreciate those moments being able to share with the great brother. You know, if it wasn't for you, Brother Bumani, I would not have had that connection, and I am so grateful for such. But listening tonight to all of these other, I'm sure, amazing people that have come on the line to share their experiences, those who loved him close, those who continue to honor him and continue to lay upon the foundation that people like Baba Masai has built for us through their blood, their sweat, their tears, their years, you know. So I am grateful just to be on the line tonight to hear all of these wonderful things. And I'm not going to hold long, but I just want to say that let's continue to do the work as we know he would have wanted, because I feel like it would be in vain if we don't continue to try to pick up some form of this struggle on this journey, because he has been a prime example to all of us on standing up for what we believe in and continuing to organize and carry out our plans and do as we need to do, not only first and foremost by ourselves, but by our people, being that we are a reflection of each other, regardless to whom or what. So to the family again, my condolences. And we love you all, and thank you again for this opportunity that you all are coming on here to honor the life of such a great brother. Thank you once again, and Freedom Land.
I appreciate it, Freedom Land. Okay, I'm going to go to our next person. Freedom Land, blow your lines up and go ahead.
Hey, can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead. Go ahead. Come on.
Free the land. Free the land. Free the land. How's everybody doing tonight? A library has fallen, but the lessons remain, you know. I just want to, you know, as everybody else said, give my condolences to the family. Make sure everybody knows how brilliant and beautiful Baba Masai was. My name is Kamasi. I met Baba Masai when I came into working with the provisional government about back in 2020 as a deputy minister of information. And the brother, you know what I'm saying, sharp, straight sharp. I didn't even know all that he has been through and all that he's done, told me later, you know what I'm saying, just like connecting with him. And I'm not one to talk long, so I won't be doing that, but I'll just share one little thing. Where, for the case with me and Baba Masai were supposed to connect on an individual basis plenty of times. And it just never seemed to work out. Me, I'm always, like, on the go, doing some type of work or, like, doing something where it's involved my family. And so we always said, hey, we need to connect. We need to connect. We're in the same city. We live in Atlanta. And it just never worked out. So just as I opened up with, like, a library has fallen, I myself am in my 20s. For all the young organizers out there that may be on this call or just, you know what I'm saying, in the atmosphere, I want to push that idea and make that charge where everybody that's, you know, on the line that is an elder, if you want to reach out to me, please do so. Because that's one thing that I've been regretting for the past 2 weeks with Baba Masai being gone. Like, damn, like, I really could have, you know, had a sit down with him and we could have had a conversation and that would have enhanced me so much, but that never happened. Right? And so for us young organizers, man, we need that. We're going through a lot. We're going through trials and errors in situations where we probably don't even need to be, like, having to go through this experience because y'all already went through that. Or maybe we have to go through it to, like, knock our head against the wall so that we know better. We know the stove is hot when we touch it, right? But we need those lessons. So, again, I plead, you know what I'm saying, just reach out. I'm not going to get my number, but reach out to Bumani and, you know, try to connect to whoever. And, of course, it's on both of us. Like, it's on the y'all organizers to reach out to the y'all, and it's on y'all to reach out to us so that this thing can keep on going. But it's got to happen.
if it don't happen, we're going to fall. So the last time I seen Baba Maasai, he came out to an event that Community Movement Builders was having, not really an event, but just him and Baba Jihad came to give us a talk. And it was just lovely. It was just brilliant. Just hearing their story sitting at their feet. And that's really all I want to do. So make that charge. Whoever want to take up that that responsibility, please reach out and we can make it happen. Free to land.
I mean, that's we appreciate that. Appreciate that. I'll come by to go to the next person. Jumbo, Comrade Freedom, go ahead.
Right on, Romani. Appreciate the opportunity to jump in here with all these comrades and to hear and to feel the love everybody has for Baba Maasai, even to hear his daughter. It was real rewarding just to hear that and to know from hearing that my little ego was wrong in terms of thinking I was something special when Baba Maasai would spend hours on the phone. See, I can see now that wasn't about me. You know, I'm saying this in jest, but that he's like that with everybody from what I'm hearing. His love and his passion and his desire to organize and point in the right direction, even to correct some modern day issues such as defunding the police and other types of things that went on over the last couple of years. He would struggle in those conversations and put a lot of clarity on the table. So I really do appreciate that. And I literally was kind of surprised that he would spend so much time. He was not stingy with his time at all. And, you know, this is some kind of a quality I kind of find in, you know, a lot of revolutionaries, especially the elders, and particularly the Black Liberation Army folk who, if they have time to talk to you, they will go deep and they will go where you want to go in those conversations. And you generally come out with maybe a half a book full of information if you're listening. And one of the things was unique about Baba Maasai and my interactions with him is he allowed for me to record the conversation. I'm just not that quick to remember and gather information as some of you historians on this line. And I kind of felt shame in the sense that I had to ask him, could I record this? But in hindsight, I want to say in love and respect and tribute to him and hit all of the great work that he's done, that folk, especially young folk, do your best to get on these kinds of conversations with these elders while they're here and ask for their permission to record. Let's have their own words in some kind of a volume that we could create before they get passed out of here. And so I wanted to listen in on everybody else, but I'm thinking, hey, let me just go ahead and just, you know, jump in there and share how he affected my life, my struggle, my walk in this revolutionary struggle. And so to that end, you know, I want to give my condolences, my love and respect to his family members, those that I have not met and maybe haven't never met me. I want you to know that your father, your uncle, your loved one, Maasai, was God's precious gift in a revolutionary struggle in terms of him being able to affect people's lives. Just to get a call from that brother out the blue, you know, I don't even know how to explain how that, you know, makes you feel worthy of something, you know, and definitely, you know, a lot of us follow the celebrity. Modern-day celebrities. These are celebrities to me, Jihad, Ashanti, his comrades on this call. And when I say celebrity, I'm using it in a different way. Baba Maasai, these are celebrities. These are people who I want to contact, touch, hear from, because my life is enhanced when I do. Other than that, you know, I just love this, man. I appreciate you, Bomani, for even having this program. As I told you, this is something that we have to do, and I hope my words don't fall on deaf ears in terms of recording. I think I told Jihad a few years ago I would hope that he would write his book, that we could hear in his first voice, what he's experiencing. I think that should resonate across the board to everybody else. So, yeah, appreciate you. Thank you. Love you. Free the land, everybody. Free the land.
How to be necessary, I'm over the hoop. That's up. I'm about to open up the next person line. Free line, Baba Rashid. Go ahead, brother.
Yes, sir, free line.
I mean, that's
it. Hey, everybody. I met brother, sorry, on the Sister Sophia when she was Minister of Defense of the Black Legion. I think she was the vice president at the same time. And also with the Jericho Movement, the RNA used to be deeply involved with the Jericho Movement. And one of the big things that happened with the Jericho Movement, we decided to go to Washington and do the Jericho around, around, you know, the White House. You can't get there now because they put, after some of those things happened, they put blocks up, so you can't get that close. And we had a message for some of the presidents in the past, trying to get messages to them. We never could directly get them to them, but they sent somebody down to the gate to get it. But the Jericho march that we did started out with a handful of comrades, and then all kinds of people came and joined us. Japanese, all kinds of folks that saw us marching and heard people singing about the Jericho. So I don't know if they did it for a Christian reason or whether they just did it, you know, because they felt what we was doing. Brother Messiah and I go back to some different kind of directions than what I've heard. And those directions is nothing that I need to talk about. I sending condolences to the family and all of the other comrades on that who actually knew him. We spent time with him. In fact, me and Brother Atkin had a room for him because we thought he was coming, and we didn't know that he had transitioned into the ancestry at that time. So I give condolences to the family and free the land. All right, everybody. I yield.
I appreciate that, Bob. I appreciate it. But open the line for the next person. Hold up. Let me see. Hold up. Let's see. Okay. Revolutionary greeting. Baba Kazi, the line is open. Go ahead, Bob. Baba Kazi, the line is open.
Oh, okay. Peace.
Yeah, go ahead.
Free
go
the
ahead,
land. Bob. Free the land. Honorable, free them all. I just got a quick thing. I'm on the road right now. But I just got a quick thing to say about Brother Masai. He was a soldier, a principled soldier in the struggle. I met him when we got out on the outside. And after Sister Sophia recruited me, after I got out, but I met Masai when we were working at AFSC, and I just got to say, I know the brother's a righteous, just soldier, committed to fighting to overthrow the United States government and set up a Republic of New Africa, which for a while I didn't see it as possible, and I was struggling a different way. But since the last 30 years, I changed my views. And I agree that we need to separate. We need to set up our own. And I thank the brother, my condolences to the family for all the conversations we had in struggle and sincere struggle about how we're going to win. You know, starts where it begins, with the fight, you know, on move for the land.
Sir, I appreciate it, Baba Kazi. I'll be about to go to our next person. Free the land, Brother Mustafa, go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I ask Allah to purify my heart, to guide my heart, and to protect my heart. I ask Allah to purify my tongue, to guide my tongue, and to protect my tongue. I ask the Most High to purify my mind, to guide my mind, and to protect my mind. I greet you with the most revolutionary greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum. And free the land by any means necessary. I'd like to thank the family, first of all, for giving me the honor to watch Baba Masai Body with Sheikh Jahar Abdul Mumin. Like he said, I'm the chairperson of Atlanta Jericho. I'm also a member of the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. I'm also an unapologetically New African Muslim. Me and Musai talked a whole lot about many different things, especially the historical continuity of being New Africa and what it means to be a part of the New African independence movement. And also to understand that many of the freedom fighters that was part of BLA was all not Black Panthers. Mutulu Shakur was a New African freedom, part of the New African freedom fighter wing. And he was big on putting things in its proper context and on the historical things. For me, he's a library, you know, that has been we have lost. But alhamdulillah, I had the privilege to sit with him, take him to the grocery store. When he'll tell me he wanna go to the grocery store here, and you say, well, I'm gonna take you to this grocery store. He said, no, they don't sell my bread. I wanna go to this grocery store. And I used to say, man, just say you wanna go to Kroger. I miss him. Even on our journalist trip to New York, to go to Sekou Odinga Gymnasium. We did a 16-hour road trip up there. And it was a blessing, man, to hear him talk about a whole lot of things historically. He's taught me about certain things. Due to the fact that I did 26 and a half years, so it's a lot of stuff I can relate to him. He's taught me about certain things. And he's always debriefed me and always remind others that revolutionaries cannot romanticize revolution. And a lot of times he would tell me that some of the things and mistakes that they made in the movement, so I won't make those same mistakes. So for me, it has been an honor and a blessing to be amongst him. Because I used to always ask myself, how you identify yourself? Do you identify yourself as an African-American Muslim? I used to just be messing with him. He said, no, I'm just like you, a new African Muslim. And it was alhamdulillah to always go through books, to always read, sit, and go through, have conversations. I still got a picture of him and Sekou Odinga and Baba AK when was at Mutulu Gymnasium. And I had took a picture, and he's like, you always taking pictures, but you don't ever want to be in the picture. Because I knew that, like one of the brothers said on the phone, that it was going to be a time that they're not here no more amongst us. And I never wanted to be the person to be like, I wish I would have asked this, and I didn't ask it. So I used to always call him up, or he'll call me, or we'll meet at the West End Masjid, and we would talk. And he had poured on me a whole lot, and I still been trying to wrap my head around with all the different elders, man, from Baba Watana, A.K., Mutulu Shakur, Sekou Odinga, Jahar Abdul Mumin, even Baba Masai, like how they pour into me. I still be trying to ask myself, what is the Most High really trying to tell me? Because I do a whole lot of streets work, and Masai used to always tell me to watch my back, because I used to be in the trenches a lot doing street outreach work. Because he always say, man, take material with you, take this this paper with you, and create political education class amongst the people in the hood. And it was a blessing, man. It was an honor for, like I said, for the family to allow us to do that. Man, that was the hardest call I got in the world from Baba AK. I didn't even want to believe Professor Akia. I didn't want to believe Baba when he said that Masai had passed. So I texted his phone, and his daughter responded it was true. Because I had just got through talking to him. And it was like, it was just unreal. But I'm forever miss him. But like he always told me, the struggle continues, man. You know what I mean? We just can't romanticize the revolution, man. We can't never want to be a part of anybody's empire. And that way he used to always stress to me. He said, no matter what, man. He said, we got to go down. We got to die fighting. We can't never give up. I don't want to say too much, but I'd like to thank you, Bo Money, you know what I mean, and the elders, man, for sharing in the family as well, for sharing Baba Masai with us, man. Because I know a lot of times, even for the revolutionary kids, it'd be hard for them as well. But I'm grateful, man. Thank you. Assalamu alaikum, free land by any means necessary.
I appreciate it, Kyle. I appreciate it. I go to the next person. Free land, Baba Zolo. Your line is open, Baba.
Oh. As-salamu alaikum. Ramatullahi wa barakatuhu. Yid Mubarak. I met Brother Masai 2017. It was came the motel room in Gary, Indiana with Hondo and Brother Khalid. It was total trust, total commitment, total friendship, total love, total one individual when we first met. So we didn't even have to discuss certain things. We already knew what the objective was. And the sacrifices that we made, I told him that when I was in prison, I used to study, you know, that case through the New African Prisons Organization publication, then later the Spear and Shield. And, you know, mistakes, successes, you know, the psychological effect. You know, going through torture and other things, you know, in these camps. You know, so I was still kind of going through some traumatic stress syndrome thing. Just normal, you know, it's normal in the sense that been isolated for so many years, you know, you come in contact with people in other situations, you might kind of overreact sometime. Well, Masai caught me a couple of times on a few little small things. It was small, but it could have led to something big. And but he caught it early, you know, and so that was that let me know that I'm, you know, I'm in the so-called real world now, but we have to conduct ourselves a certain type of way and be mindful of that, you know, be more patient. That's what he was telling me, be more patient, you know. So I said, yeah, I should be the one, you know, because I was on death row for a number of those years. And he's called me all the time. We was talking on the phone all the time. But I hadn't talked with him about last maybe a year or so. I hadn't spoke with him on the phone. I was tied up with some other stuff, you know, and working and keeping my head above water and at the same time keep the heat off me. So I had to watch so many things. But then my travel wasn't as much as I used to do. I was just tied down to this job, which I'm trying to figure out how to get out of it, because it's like a ball and chain on my ankle, and it's slowing me down on other things I can be doing. My energy is like it used to be, so I got to make good on what I got left. That's how Brother Masai was. You know, Brother Masai and Malmeen, you know, those two brothers, man, you know, we just gelled, you know, like as one, you know, on first contact. And I heard Brother Hondo and Brother Khalid, those two brothers, you know, they've been my pillows, you know, since I've been out. So we don't have to say, you know, what need not to be said. But Brother Masai was all part of that too. He was all there, all in one. He used to keep me laughing, I like being around Messiah. He just kept everything so, you know, that type of humor, you know. But yeah, but he was him. Everything that everybody else said, I concur, and I can't really add anything else much more to that. Man, I just gotta start rambling on for a minute, you know. So I'm gonna say free the land by any means necessary. Our objective shall be achieved. Inshallah, before much longer.
We do it. I appreciate about. So, yes, sir. Yes, sir. You know, I did what I want to say. You know, first off, you know, I appreciate everybody who participated in this presentation, and also the ones who have been doing the work and continuing to work, right? In regard to this particular legacy, right, you know, as a new African, Baba Messiah exemplified the terms of resistance. You know, we've been in resistance since we've been as new African people brought the shores of North America. If you want to look at it from 1526, you want to look at 1619, whatever you want to look at it, we've been in resistance. Our culture has always been resistant. It doesn't matter what we refer to ourselves, religiously or culturally. We all been in resistance in regards to what we're doing, right? And Bob Messiah showed and proved that to the end of his days, right? You know, and like the ancestors would say, free the land. You know, and I thank everybody again. Shout out to the family and all the loved ones. Nobody are present. We are always here with you. You know, they take a village to build a nation. And I'm going to say long live the resistance. I'm going to say long live the guerrilla. Peace.